if you're like me, you want to scream at the person, liar, liar, pants on fire. First one is honestly. Honestly?
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
Welcome to Your Intended Message. Today, this is a solo show. I'm going alone. Yeah, that's me, just George Torok here to offer you some of my insights and tips on how to communicate more effectively to deliver with certainty your intended message. Let's review the dirty dozen words and phrases that sabotage your message. Take these words and phrases out of your messages, and you're more likely to be effective and successful when you speak. What are these dirty dozen? Well, let's start. The first category is the category of vague words. Vagueness. And it's hard to come up with a vague word. If I tell you to come up with a vague word, you probably, it's difficult to come up with one because the concept itself, vagueness, does not help us think. It does not help us see. What are the two biggest common mistakes of vagueness that people use? They talk about stuff. Get your stuff together. Get your stuff. Pick up your stuff. Well, what is stuff? What does stuff look like? What does stuff feel like? What does it smell like? When they say stuff, do they mean your gear? Do they mean your books? Do they mean your materials? Do they mean the groceries? What is the stuff? The only time that stuff is a good phrase is when you're talking about what you put in the turkey. Don't be a turkey. Stop using stuff. And the other one is things. And yes, there was a song from The Sound of Music, "These are a few of my favorite things." In that case, it's okay. But other than that, stop using the word things. Why? Because again, what do you see, what do you feel when you hear the word things? Oh yeah, I really get it now. Now I understand you're talking about things. It's vague. It doesn't tell us what you're talking about. When you say things, what is it you mean? Are you talking about benefits? Are you talking about products? Are you talking about problems? Are you talking about steps in a process? Are you talking about trucks? Are you talking about machinery? Are you talking about ideas? Those are specific and help people see and understand what you're talking about. Stuff and things are not clear. Get rid of them. The second category is the use of double negatives. Yuck. Ooh, double negatives. This confuses people, and it also kind of implies the undercurrent here is when you use double negatives, you're not committed to what you're saying. That's why you're couching it in it with a double negative. Some examples? Well, here's one. Don't hesitate to call me. What does that mean? Does that mean call me? So why the don't hesitate? Why the two negative words at the beginning of that sentence? Why the extra noise when you really only needed to say, call me when you feel like it. Call me. Don't hesitate to call me. Isn't that silly? Why would I hesitate? And why are you telling people negative, negative? Get rid of the negatives. Here's another. I wouldn't hesitate to recommend. Well, recommend is a nice word at the end there. However, it's at the end of the sentence. And in front of that are two cumbersome negatives. Wouldn't hesitate. Wouldn't hesitate. What does that mean? Why don't you say, I recommend? Is that what you meant? I recommend? Why make us do more work and try to figure out what the double negatives mean? Another one is, if it's no trouble. Well, trouble, of course, that whole sentence is negative if it's no trouble. So you are assuming that it is trouble. And by the way, what if it is trouble? You ask me to do something and you say, well, if it's no trouble for you to do that, Well, what if it is trouble? Does that mean I don't have to do it? Because it's trouble. Because you introduced the concept of trouble. Just get rid of that phrase altogether. If you want someone to do something, you're asking for something, get rid of this no trouble. When it's convenient for you, I'd appreciate if you could do this for me. Here's another, even taking it further with the double negatives. The negative, double negative question, or the negative question, don't you agree? What's the correct answer to that question? How would you answer that question? So there are two possibilities. You agree or you don't agree. And so if you agree, the correct answer to don't you agree is no. No, I agree. That's the correct answer. So now you got a negative in the question and then a negative in the answer while you're trying to indicate a positive answer. Isn't that weird? Isn't that crazy? And the way you figure out a negative question, the way you figure out what the question is asking is you make it into a statement. So don't you agree? Rewrite it as you don't agree. That's the question. You don't agree? And the answer is no, I do agree. So the question is, do you agree? Do you agree? Ah, that's easy to answer. A lot less thinking, a lot less energy, a lot wasted time. Get rid of those double negatives. Get rid of that negative thinking. The next category is emotional triggers. And this one is harder to nail down. It's more along, you know it when you hear it. And there's a lot of emotional triggers that words that mean something that typically, these are sensitive words. They're usually related to culture, religion, disabilities, sex, politics, or other emotionally charged issues. And there's a lot of phrases that come into this category. And sometimes you have to be very careful when you're talking about a sensitive issue. A friend of mine was speaking to a group and someone asked him about the outside possibility of a person doing something that would ruin the process. And he replied with the phrase, well, we can't do anything about the nutcase that might do. The problem with that is he was speaking to a group of medical care, healthcare professionals who objected to them. Nutcase was an emotional trigger. I'll give you another example. I delivered a presentation to a group and I was talking about presentation skills. And I mentioned some of the silly things that people do. And I use the word stupid. Well, that just would just be plain stupid if you did that. It would be stupid if you read your slides to the audience. At the end of the day, curious enough, the HR coordinator who arranged for me to speak, one of the first things she said to me was, did you know that you used the word stupid 9 times today? For her, that was a trigger word. And so I went, oh, I had no idea. So I've taken that word as much as possible out of my vocabulary. Be careful of those trigger words. The next category is phrases and words that are insulting. Insulting, yeah. They tend to imply that when the speaker that uses them implies that they are superior to the audience, to the listener. And these phrases can reek of sarcasm. What are some of the phrases that come under insulting? Well, obviously you didn't know. Obviously we are. Well, if it's obvious, then you don't need to say it's obvious. By saying it's obvious, it almost feels sarcastic. Another phrase in this category is, you probably never heard of. Again, when you say this, you're indicating that you think you're smarter, you know more than your listeners. You probably never heard of because you're dumb and I'm smart. Another one that might come under this category is, well, everybody knows. Well, maybe not. Maybe everybody doesn't know. And by the way, who is everybody? Who is the everybody you're talking about here? Which is a vague reference. What does that mean? And when you say everybody knows, what if someone in the audience doesn't know? How did you make them feel? So avoid these insulting phrases. The next category comes under self-diminishing and false modesty. self-diminishing and false modesty. What does that mean? Well, how do you feel when you hear the speaker using these phrases? In my humble opinion, are they really being humble? Are they being humble? If you say you're humble, you're not humble. The Dalai Lama is humble and never says, in my humble opinion. If you're stating an opinion, then state your opinion. If you're stating a position based on your experience, by the way, your experience is more valuable than your opinion. In my experience, in my observations, but my humble opinion, you right off the bat said, okay, it's a humble opinion, so we might as well just not listen. A variation of this is my 2 cents worth. If all you've got is 2 cents, we don't want to hear it. Keep it. Keep the change. We're only looking for the big dollar ideas here. Forget your, keep your 2 cents to yourself. You're wasting your time. Another variation is, well, I'm just saying, and people say that almost as if they're apologizing for what they said. I'm just saying, well, if it's valuable, it's valuable. If it's not, you don't have to add, saying, I'm just saying, adds no value. It doesn't modify, does nothing to make the point stronger. Here's another variation of these phrases. When you make a statement and then you add on a limp qualifier, what do I mean? Here's an example. We will have this project complete by Friday, I think. Or we will have this project done by Friday, I guess. Or we will have this project done by Friday, hopefully. See how those limp qualifiers diminish the value of the bold statement that was just made? Get rid of them. The next category is dishonest or insincere. And when you hear these phrases, if you're like me, you want to scream at the person, liar, liar, pants on fire. First one is honestly. Honestly? People often say this when they're asked the question, honestly? Really? Why would you say honestly? Are you suggesting that you're now going to start to be honest and everything you said before was not honest, or that you usually don't reply honestly? So there, this point time, you have to actually say that this time I'm honest. Or variation of that is to tell the truth. Oh, you're going to tell the truth now. Oh, well, that's new. You usually don't tell the truth. And would you ever say to lie to you? Because that's the opposite of that. Oh, here's one. With all due respect. With all due respect. When you hear this phrase, recognize that the person who says this phrase doesn't have a lot of respect for you or what you represent. And so they're putting that up front to say, with all due respect, what they really mean is, well, with all due respect, and there's not much respect due, so my respect is very low for you right now. And I'm letting you know, with all due respect, I don't believe you, I disagree with you, as opposed to, that's a good point, and I disagree. I have a different position. I have a different way of seeing it. But get rid of the silly phrases like, with all due respect. Of course, a variation of that we probably hear often on the phone. The variation of with all due respect is the phone message that says, your message is important to us. No, it's not. If it was important, you would answer the phone. Next category of cliches. Oh, there's so many in this category. What's wrong with using cliches? Everybody uses cliches, right? That's everybody. Who's everybody again? Who's that everybody? The cliches, when you use a cliche, it demonstrates unoriginal thought. In other words, you use a cliche because you can't come up with something better. And yes, there are some phrases that are appropriate at certain times. However, they are, many of them, overused. The biggest one here, the one in the big bugaboo for me in this category at the top of the list is the phrase, think outside the box. Think outside the box. Now, when would a person use that phrase? They might say, well, I'm a outside the box thinker. You're trying to say that you're a creative thinker, really. You're using a phrase that's been around for decades, and that's how you demonstrate that you are a creative thinker. Really? That's the best you could come up with? Go back into your box. Or when a leader says to their team, well, team, I need you to think outside the box on this one. Really? You want your team to be creative, and you inspire their creativity by rehashing tired cliche that's been around for decades. That's the best you could come up with. Come up with something better. Some of the other, oh, there's so many cliches. How about raise the bar? Raise the bar. Really? Have you heard that one before? Or this person needs no introduction. Cut and dried. At the end of the day, or there's no I in team. All boring cliches, some of them corny. Avoid cliches like the plague. Next category of dirty dozen words and phrases that sabotage your message is jargon. And every group, every tribe has its own jargon. And think about when you first join a new tribe, whether that is a club, an association, a company, an industry, a community group. One of the first things you do is you need to learn to speak their jargon, their code, and how excited you are after the first, whatever it takes, weeks or months, and you now understand and you can talk the jargon with them, which is fine because the jargon can make some conversations faster when you understand it. The difficulty is when you take that jargon and you use it when speaking to someone who's not part of the tribe. The next category is colloquial or slang. Not a big one, but still destructive. And when you use slang, colloquial, street talk, gang talk, you are degrading yourself and your listeners. My big bugaboo here with this one is the phrase, you guys. You guys, that is a disgusting phrase. I hate to hear that when someone refers to me as you guys. When the speaker calls us you guys, they are indicating that we're part of their gang, their street gang. They're talking to a gang, and that's how low their respect for us is. That's what they see us, street thugs, you guys. They're also demonstrating that they don't understand, they don't know the English language because the word you is both singular and plural at the same time. So you can certainly address a group with the word you, which demonstrates respect. The other point is when you use the word you, not only does it address the group, but it now feels to the listener like you are speaking to them directly when you say, here's what this means to you. Here's what you can do, as opposed to you guys. Yuck. The next category is absolutes. I could say, never use an absolute, but that's an absolute. And there are exceptions to every rule, of course. Absolutes, if I said that absolutes are always a lie, that would be an absolute, and that would be a lie. Absolutes are almost always, are often untrue. People use absolutes when they're exaggerating, often when they are exaggerating. So be careful of absolutes. Here's one that comes up often. I see this all the time. Really? All the time? What does that mean? You see it all the time. Does that mean you saw it once? Does that mean it happens once a year to you? Does that mean it happens once a month? Does that mean you see it once a week? Did you see it once a day? Did you see it once an hour, once a minute, or once a second? What does all the time mean? Again, another useless phrase. It would be much more helpful if you simply said, you know, in the past 2 weeks, this has probably come up a dozen times. Or we dealt with this problem last year at least 20 times. Or we had this happen 3 times in the past weekend. Now, those are specifics. See how specifics are always better than vague. So all the absolutes are actually similar to vague phrases. Avoid the absolutes. The next category, which is not a terrible crime or sin by itself, but it's still destructive to your message, and that is adverbs. Adverbs, you might say, what's wrong with adverbs? Well, adverbs, the purpose of adverbs is to define, to modify, to clarify a verb, an adjective, or another adverb. In other words, to make it clearer, to make it more understandable what that verb, adjective, or adverb is already saying. In general, be wary of adverbs. Whenever you have adverbs, ask yourself, are they really helping? And here are three that are misused. Here's the most frequently misused adverb, and that's very. Oh, that's very good. Does very good mean that it was excellent? Does that mean it was superb? Find words that describe what you're talking about instead of adding very. When you use the very, you're being lazy. You're not looking for a better verb. It's very cold. Well, what does that mean, it's very cold? Does that mean you're lying on the beach down south somewhere and it cooled a bit so much that you had to put on a sweater? Or does very cold mean that it was almost freezing? Or does it mean it was freezing? It was frigid outside. Does that mean it was like a blizzard as opposed to very cold? That doesn't help us. We don't see a better picture when you say very. And some people take it one step further and say, very, very cold. Are you kidding me? And other variations of these adverbs that are misused is really. It was really cold. As opposed to be unreally cold, that would be the opposite. Really cold doesn't help. Oh, and or, it was pretty cold. It was pretty cold. Pretty. How is cold pretty? And is the opposite of pretty cold ugly cold? So get rid of those adverbs in general, but in particular, avoid very, really, and pretty. And the last category of filler words are filler words. You know, what, whatever, and, you know, and that sort of thing, and so on, and anyways, right? Okay, yeah? Get rid of that. They're wasted noise. They're static. They take away the strength of your message. They're usually noises that we make when we're thinking or we can't think of a better word. They're usually the cause of bad habits. Check your filler words. So there you have the dirty dozen words and phrases that could sabotage your message. Now you know what they are. Now you can become aware of them and you can start to weed them out of your messages, whether it's spoken or written. If you're looking for more ideas on presentation skills and you haven't yet, be sure to sign up for the weekly tips on superior presentations, and you can do that at toroctips.com. That's toroctips.com, and you can find that link in the description below. Remember to come back every week, because most of the time we interview guests, experts on communication from around the world. So far, we've had guests from 13 countries, which gives us a terrific perspective. And every once in a while, you can tune in to one of these solo shows where will offer you some of my insights. Remember, if you want to get your message across, get rid of the dirty dozen words and phrases that sabotage your message so that you can deliver your intended message.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.